John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast. John Anik and Kenny Florian.
I fucking love them. I can't get enough of them.
Let's hear that voice tonight.
Big jab there from Duffy, and Frank Mir is hooked now. Oh! Down goes Duffy out cold! Frank Mir does it again! Rock'em sock'em robots here! Oh my goodness!
I can't believe
they're a couple of absolutely self-involved bullshit artists.
Here are your hosts, John Anik and Kenny Florian.
Well, if Justin Gaethje is not your favorite fighter, then he's certainly not on your list of, like, your least favorite fighters in the UFC. He's probably in your top five. We're back on video today. It's episode 217 of the Anik and Florian podcast, September 16th. That's a Monday here in the States. It's 2019. Ken Flo, it's good to see you, man. I'm hoping the video doesn't mess with the audio because I'm a radio guy. Audio always comes first, but, you know, they want to see you. They haven't seen you in a while unless they're watching jiu-jitsu and battle bots, and many of our listeners, of course, are. Good morning, sir.
Dude, always good to see you, but especially today. Your sweatshirt brings in a tear to my eye for two reasons. Number one, that's the sign that you see in
Massachusetts. That's the street sign. That's the city.
Entering title. Yeah, man. Entering title town. That is just amazing. I need one of those.
And it says established 2001, which is really when this crazy run of Boston championships begun. Little hiccup in the audio there, Ken Flo. Not a good sign, by the way. So I know it puts you in a bad mood when the audio goes out early. Not a fucking good sign right now. But I'm going to try to keep focus on the task at hand. We're going to recap this Gaethje show and obviously some picks coming up on Yair Rodriguez, Jeremy Stephens. Joe Osborne from Odd Shark is going to join us on the show. Ray Longo Minute here in about 8 minutes. Justin Gaethje, third consecutive win by first round knockout. Probably the most watchable fighter in MMA, I would think. He's got a lot of things going for him. Confidence, cardio, a chin, tremendous power, confidence. I could go on and on, Kenny, but another big win for Justin Gaethje, and he got it done early, as many expected he would.
Yeah, absolutely, and he got it done supposedly after dealing with an eye infection. You know, when he came out, I could tell. I thought something was wrong with his eyes, or I could look like he just wasn't all the way there. It didn't matter. Gaethje is an absolute savage. Did exactly what he needed to do against Donald Cerrone. I thought that, you know, he showed a little bit more lateral movement. He wasn't as aggressive as he typically is, I think. And I thought he needed to do that against Donald Cerrone. But the pressure was still there. He was a little bit more cautious in his approach, and did a great job of getting inside on the pocket, grabbing that collar tie, landing those short shots, and rocking Donald Cerrone and taking him out. And referee Jaron Vallel, a little late in my opinion. I know Donald Cerrone initially was complaining about the stoppage, but it definitely should have been stopped. It might have gone one punch too many, actually, in my opinion. You know, when you get knocked out, when you get rocked, when you get buzzed, time doesn't really equate to what we normally see as time, right? I mean, it seems like everything just kind of goes in slow motion. And for Donald Cerrone, he was on all fours, was not moving at all, even when he was just dropped. And that was the second time he was dropped. Just vicious stuff there from Gaethje.
Yeah, Gaethje was notably irritated with the referee at the end of the fight. But obviously, that's a tough job. And I think Gaethje did acknowledge as much in his post-fight interview with Daniel Cormier. This obviously sets Gaethje up for a big fight. But you almost want to just stop down and pause down, even though it's not that much fight footage, and just appreciate Justin Gaethje, right? And thank God he eventually found his way into the UFC, where he richly deserves to be, to prove himself in the greatest division in the UFC that he can be a champion. And I think for a lot of these guys, Dustin Poirier included, it's inconvenient that Khabib Nurmagomedov is the champion right now because of all that he brings to the table. But at the very least, this puts Gaethje in prime position, right? Were it not for the existence of Tony Ferguson, he would be the guy. A lot of big fights ahead of Justin Gaethje. What whets your appetite in terms of Gaethje's next fight?
You know, listen, I do think that Ferguson should get that next shot against Khabib Nurmagomedov. I know there's been talk about a potential fight with Conor McGregor. I think that's a fight that would be massive. I think Gaethje obviously wants that fight. If there's one guy, I would put him in there with the Fergusons and, of course, Habib, that deserves that kind of money to fight a Conor McGregor. It's Gaethje, because you know exactly what you're going to get with Gaethje. Yeah. He's going to pressure you. He's going to search for that knockout. He doesn't care if he gets knocked out. Yeah. He knows that it's going to be one of two things that happen out there. He's knocking his opponent or he's getting knocked out. You got to love that if you're a promoter. And I think Gaethje is fighting a little bit smarter. I really do believe that. I think he's a little bit more cautious in approach. He's not just blindly coming forward. I think that's a fight that would absolutely deliver.
You bring up a good point. Like, what is Justin Gaethje worth, right? Like, if I'm negotiating a television contract and I'm the UFC and I'm in that negotiation, I certainly want Gaethje fighting, right, in that exclusive negotiating window, right? I mean, he is bulletproof, right, in terms of matchmaking. And it doesn't matter who he fights. Of course, he acknowledged that a fight between him and Tony Ferguson would be just of the most anticipated variety. So Khabib and Tony seem destined to fight. You know, Dustin Poirier and Donald Cowboy Cerrone have never fought, so that matchup all of a sudden seems to make some sense.
I like that a lot.
And those guys are number two and number four, respectively. Obviously, Gaethje's going to move up. Conor McGregor is there at number three, so the Gaethje-Conor fight makes a lot of sense. Ally Quinta, six. Paul Felder, seven. And then the name that nobody is talking about that eventually I think a lot of people are going to be talking about, Gregor Gillespie, still undefeated, number 11 in the world, and just a hugely problematic matchup for so many people, I would think, in that division. Certainly his schedule is something that is going to be criticized. You know, Gregor's a friend of mine, best fisherman in MMA, hashtag best wrestler in MMA. You know, you got to fight too, right? And yeah, for one reason or another, he hasn't been all that active. But that's the pecking order at 155 pounds. So I think Gaethje and Conor seem to be on a sort of collision course. We will see how it shakes out from there. God, there's so many different things on this main card and on this fight card that we could talk about. Did you see the fight between the Canadian Tristan Connolly and Michel Pereira by chance, Flo?
I did. Okay. Yes.
So, I got Niner, our stage manager, texting me, like, what is this clown Pereira doing, you know? And he missed weight, obviously. If you didn't see the fight, it was a 15-minute fight of the night. Tristan Connolly, on 5 days' notice, representing Vancouver in Vancouver, gets the win by unanimous decision. I thought it was a close fight. I think I might even had Pereira winning rounds one and two. I watched it back this morning. Certainly a 10-8, I would think, for Connolly in round three, and he certainly was deserving of the nod, even though I thought it was a close fight. But just a lot of layers to this, right? Pereira's style, Kenny, doing backflips and nearly landing on top of guys. Like, a lot of stuff that people like me haven't seen in an octagon before.
Yeah.
You can say he paid the price for it, sure. I mean, he has gone on to make a grand statement about his weight cut and everything that went wrong with it.
Yes.
38 and a half pounds, by the way, for Michel Pereira. But your thoughts on that fight while we have your time, Ken?
You know, I'll be honest, you know, I didn't love the fight. I thought it was a lot of sloppy, amateurish work from both fighters. Yeah. Just poor decision-making, I thought. You know, and listen, I get it. Pereira wants to go out there and entertain the fans and all that stuff. And, you know, he was kind of highly touted. I appreciate that he's out there to entertain and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, you know, if you keep trying to entertain and you keep on losing, or if he loses another or another, he's going to have to entertain outside of the UFC. At the end of the day, it comes down to getting the W. And, you know, losing against a guy like Connolly on short notice like that.
No, it's bad.
It looked bad. It looked really, really bad. And those are the kind of fights that, you know, he's going to have to really come back from. And be impressive. You know, he's got to show that, yes, it was due to the weight cut, and I get it. He didn't have one of his cornermen in town from Brazil, you know, so he had to do that weight cut by himself, which, you know, sounds miserable, just the weight cut alone. But having to go through that yourself, no fighter should have to do that. It's, in fact, you know, pretty dangerous as well. So, again, I feel for him in that regard, but I just didn't love the fight, to be honest. It was good that it was back and forth. The fact that Connolly was able to get the win on short notice like that is impressive. Whether he's UFC quality or not, right, I don't know. I don't want to be critical of that, but I'd like to get a chance to watch him again. And, you know, it was an exciting fight for the fans, though. It just, for me, I don't think it was a very technical one.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. And I think it is safe to say that Tristan Connolly accomplished more in terms of resonating with the Canadian market than a lot of Canadian fighters have done, and a lot more opportunities, right? And certainly the short notice backdrop, I think, helped him a lot. Yeah, remains to be seen on him. On the other side, Pineda, 25 years old, already his 10th professional loss. So you can be sure, by the way, Kenflo never had 10 professional losses as an MMA fighter. Maybe five or six. A couple quotes from Daniel Cormier, and then we'll get to Ray Longo. Just going to throw these out there. Quotes about Pineda on the broadcast. A lot of big actions for a guy who missed weight was one of the first things DC said, right? A lot of these, yeah. By the way, some of these backflips, man. I don't even know. Should be illegal as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And then DC also said, you know, the Octagon is the last place in the world you want to be joking around, right? And I don't think Pineda is necessarily joking around, but a lot of these risk-reward, doing backflips, you might land with a foot on a face, which would be illegal. I don't know. It just seemed a little off-putting to me, but entertaining to watch, I guess, nonetheless. All right, Longo coming up in 60 seconds. First, though, is there something that interferes with your happiness or is preventing you from achieving your goals? Well, there's a solution that is about as uninvasive as it gets. BetterHelp Online Counseling is there for you. What certainly appeals to me, and I've said this before, you can connect with your professional counselor in a safe and private online setting. A lot of convenience that comes with that. It's done on your own time and at your own pace. Secure video or phone sessions. You can also chat and text with your therapist as well. BetterHelp has licensed professional counselors specializing in depression, anger, anxiety, relationships, family conflicts, grief, self-esteem, and more. Anything you share is 100% confidential. They've got 3,000 licensed therapists available worldwide. And if you aren't happy with your initial counselor, you can change anytime at no additional charge. Financial aid also available for those who qualify as well. And that is really the best part of this. It is truly affordable. Plus, Anik and Florian podcast listeners get 10% off your first month with discount code AF. So why not get started today? Go to betterhelp.com/AF. Simply fill out a questionnaire to help them assess your needs and get matched with a counselor you'll love. That's betterhelp.com/AF. All right, let's get to Ray Longo.
It's now time for the Ray Longo Minute.
I want you to punch a hole in his fucking chest. That's what I want.
The Ray Longo Minute. Starring Ray Longo. The John Anik and Kenny Florian Podcast.
Ray, you've been on hold like 4 minutes today.
You're big time me. You're freaking big time.
Well, you know it's tough. I mean, we do have bills to pay. All of a sudden,
hour
I guess.
For you guys, though, I swear I would have sat here in silence for another hour just to talk to you two guys.
So, unfortunately, at least Kenny and I am back on video today, and that's part of the reason why we're a little bit delayed in getting to you. So we're dealing with that variable today.
Beautiful.
Which means that your New York tan that is wearing off here mid-September will be seen in the next few weeks, if not today.
The tan is fading away is 100% correct. But we got some sun coming this week, so I expect to be well taken care of. What do we
got?
So,
let's start with Justin Gaethje. You know, sort of billing him as the most watchable man in MMA. I think if you're a promoter and you trot him out there, that's as good as it gets, right? If you're trying to showcase, you know, in some respects, all your sport can be. I know your guy, Ally Quint, at times has been linked to fights with him but hasn't fought him. Your thoughts on what Justin Gaethje was able to accomplish over the weekend?
Oh, no, I agree 100% with you. And absolutely phenomenal performance. Again, I think he goes in with the right mindset. He backs up everything he says, and that guy's thrown with bad intentions, man. There's not there's no set up punches with this guy. He's just looking to decapitate, and hats off to him, man. Because I think I'm assuming he probably did get knocked out by Cerrone in sparring, but sparring and fighting is a totally separate thing. And which brings me to the other point. I love Cerrone. I mean, first of all, I like both guys. I mean, great fight, but they got to stop him from fighting this frequently, though. Somebody's got to step in, and, you know, because it's starting to sound, where I used to love listening to him, it's starting to sound crazy to me now. The best thing about it is I get to wake up tomorrow and do it again. Like, do what again? Like, just kind of pummeled. Like, that's what I'm saying. I don't get, like, I get it. He loves fighting. He's an adrenaline junkie. I mean, you know, I look at, you know, when they're doing, like, a special on him, like, he's jumping off a building, he's a firefighter. I feel like, what a boring piece of shit I am. Holy crap, I look at that and I'm like, I gotta do something. I gotta go skydiving or something. You know, it's crazy. But I kind of worry for him at this point. I just think I like the fight, and there's no problem with that. But maybe wait 4 or 5 months. Not just every 5 weeks or 3 weeks. Or at this point, you know, because now the losses are backing up. And he's had some damage in the last 6 months, man. It's crazy.
Ray, so do you feel like Donald Cerrone is kind of his skills are deteriorating now at this point in his career? And he says he still is going to chase that belt and that he will get the belt one day. Do you not see that happening?
Well, I see. I'm going to say, let me qualify my statement.
Okay.
I see his skills diminishing if he's going to fight every 3 weeks. I'm saying that's not a good
right.
That's not a good plan for him. I think with the proper rest, he's not in that category where he's totally diminished. I just don't think his body could recoup from these wars he's getting into in such a short period of time.
Yeah.
You know, like even after Al's fight, he was fantastic in Al's fight. But I was like, when he announced that fight a month later, I'm like, damn, that's like insulting.
You know what I mean? Like,
Al's banged up from that fight, you know, it was a 5 rounder, and this guy's jumping right back in there. But again, I'm saying that was a huge mistake. And I'm not taking anything away from the guys he fought, but I it's too soon. You can't get the proper work in between when you're trying to heal up. And I think he's, you know, I know where his head's at. We get that. And he's a fighter, which is awesome. But now I think he's got to worry, but he's got to just take some time. That's what I'm saying. So I don't think, I can't really say, but I could say every 3 or 4 weeks, it's not a good routine for him.
Right.
And it'll get worse and worse.
Safe to say, and as unpredictable as MMA is, it's insulting to think you could beat Tony Ferguson at 155 pounds with next to no training camp. And that was obviously the quick turn. He fought Ia Quinta in May, Ferguson in June, and now Gaethje in September. No, I think you hit on a lot of good themes, and especially if he's chasing the belt, as Donald Cerrone repeatedly says, that's sort of the last shoe to drop for him as far as his legacy goes. Then you got to hit the reset button right now. He's still going to probably get a fight with somebody in that top 10 and really, you know, get yourself in a position to really maximize performance that night, because I think Cerrone's realistically got one more run to see if he can get back into that eliminator type spot that he was in just a couple days ago, you know.
Exactly, John. And if you're going to chase that belt, have a calculated plan on how you're going to do that.
Of course.
You know what
course.
I mean? Don't just, like you said, to think that you're jumping in with Fergie, it's admirable. You know, he's a legitimate tough guy. You know, that's all good. But, you know, first he was just fighting for the love of fighting. Now he's chasing the belt. They're two different things. You know what I mean? So I think that's a great point, to think that you could jump in with no training camp for a guy like Tony Ferguson is crazy. You know, so I think he needs to rethink some stuff. I definitely don't think he's done. I think, you know, it's like his technique slowing down, but who knows? His legs could have been injured. I don't think he was kicking as much. I don't know. He knows, and the people around him. But I'd like to see him take some time, you know. And in that period of time, if he doesn't kill himself hang gliding, you know, he'll be fine.
So I know you're not trying to give Trevor Whitman any information, but we'll see if you can answer this question candidly for us. If you're preparing for Justin Gaethje, if you're preparing Al for Justin Gaethje, what are you telling him about those first few minutes? And what are you telling him as you get ready for a guy like that? I mean, obviously Gaethje can improve, as Kenny acknowledged off the top of the show, and he's developing and maybe moving better laterally or with his head or whatever. But for that type of wild man that moves forward and just chases the finish like no other, what's the message to Al before that fight?
I tell you what, that's a listen, Gaethje's a handful, but you gotta have some really good head movement for him. He definitely can't stand right in front of him. Those beginning exchanges, even though Alvarez did, you know, they went back and forth and Alvarez eventually broke him down, but he had to absorb a shitload of punishment for that. So first thing when you're fighting Gaethje is you have to be able to absorb punishment without a doubt, because it's eventually going to come. And you know, if you can, then I think you have a good chance of winning. But I do think Whitman did do a great job with him, because he looked a little more calculated this fight. You know, he was in and out, but when he decided to throw, he was throwing with bad intention. So,
right.
He's ballsy. He's not he's kind of telling you what he's going to do. You know, it's pretty similar to Khabib. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That was the thing that confused me with Poirier, like when he said, I can't get the guy off me. Well, you got to know that nobody has, though. Like, that can't be a surprise. Like, isn't that what you trained for? Like,
right.
You know, that's why Khabib, I think, should be considered, you know, he's in that GOAT talk because he's going to tell you exactly what he's going to do, and there's not a fucking thing you could do about it at this point.
Right.
At least for the first two rounds. I mean, you know what's coming. But nobody's been able to stop it. And somebody will, you know, as time goes on. But that's what I think makes him really good. You know, as I was talking to somebody about even when Al fought him, it didn't matter who Khabib fights. He does the same shit every fight. You just can't do anything about it. You know, Alvin, we would have game planned differently because he could change it up. But Khabib, you know what's coming, man. And I think that's the same with Gaethje. He's bringing it. This was a little more cerebral, I thought. I thought, like, again, I think Trevor did a great job. I think, obviously, he knows Cerrone really well. And, you know, I think Gaethje kind of did to him what I thought Al was going to do to him. And that was it. I thought it was a great fight. He's a, you know, he's a tough out for anybody, and he deserves everything he gets because he fights anybody, any place, and he always puts it on the line. So, big fan of the guys. He's awesome.
So we know that Team Iaquinta has 1 foot out the door to Melbourne. The Airbnb is all set. Now, as you've gotten older, Ray, you have started to become a progressively later arrival during fight week. You know, big balloons at the host hotel, obviously, when Longo walks in. I mean, and obviously, you'll be at an Airbnb this time. But no, I mean, when are you getting to Melbourne? Are you going out early? Are you trying to acclimate? Or is it just going to be in and out for Ray?
I mean, I'm going to be there 6 days. I don't know if that's...
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So I'm going to leave Monday, but I think you get there like Wednesday morning, and then I'll leave Sunday.
Yeah.
So
all right.
I probably could have left Sunday maybe, but I mean, there's so much stuff going on. I'm just trying to get my schedule down to the last like minute. So I want to, you know, I got to, you know, make sure Chris is good for the next week.
Right,
so I think that was the best thing I could do, but... you know, I got good seats going there, so to say. I might be
sleeping. Yeah, you certainly have a good seat. Oh, that's good. That's good. You got the lay flat. That's good.
I had to, man. I think, you know what it is? I'm in that. I'm going to say this is unequivocally my last trip to Australia, so we're going to go out bucket list style, John.
Number 11 for me.
Me and my little fat friend will be sharing a freaking teddy bear on the plane.
How about that? Oh, put that divider up between you and Matt Serra, my God. So, that'll be a tough turn for you. That'll be a quick turn for you going to Boston with Weidman after the Australia trip with Al. But as they say, I mean, you're a soldier. You know, you got a good front row seat.
Yeah. And the only thing I had to do is, you know, we're leaving out. Matt Trocola's got a fight with Payne in Tampa in between.
Oh, man.
So he's been looking phenomenal. So I'm really very confident in what he's going to do. But I did tell him, I just don't even think I don't think I could do it, like physically do
it.
So he trained down there. That's where his original camp is from, so he's well taken care of. But I expect him to have a phenomenal fight.
And I apologize for the oversight to Matt the Steamroller Frivola. His dad, Sal, the Bulldozer Frivola, going to be in his corner. If you can't be there,
won't be in his corner, but he'll 100% be there. He's
in
Matt's
support,
biggest fan, and he's a great guy, but that's going to be a great fight for Matty.
All right, my man. Well, thanks for the time, as always, and we hope to see you live and in color back on video 1 week from today, buddy. Have a good week, all right?
Awesome. And when are you getting to Australia?
Right around the same time you do, I think, Wednesday morning. I got to MC the open workout, so buckle up for that, you know?
When
call
are you
my number,
on?
You know?
What day?
Monday.
Oh, yeah, okay. I think we're on the same flight. I'll,
you know, I hope we are. I hope we are.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
We can talk about
my
new
man. Have
group,
a great week.
Right?
I'll talk to you next week.
All right, buddy.
Week.
See ya. There he is. Ray Longo. Every week. Anik and Florian Podcast. Well, if you've been listening to this podcast for the last 4.5 years, you've heard Ray, and you've also heard me talking about Oddshark.com, absolutely my go-to site when it comes to all of my sports betting and handicapping needs. Oddshark is your source for the latest odds from leading authorities, expert editorial content, and detailed matchup picks. If you're looking for statistics and trends for an upcoming game, Oddshark has that too. Oh, and by the way, it's all free. Expert in-depth analysis, stats, numbers, and trends to help you make the sharp game day picks. Whether you want to get in on the football action, tonight's baseball slate, mixed martial arts, or anything in between, head over to oddshark.com and start playing like a shark today. That is oddshark.com. Speaking of which, now with us on the guest line, one of the lead sports analysts for oddshark.com. On Twitter, you can find him at JTFOZ. My good friend Joe Osborne is with us. Joseph, good Monday to you. How's it going, buddy?
John, I am good. How are you, my man?
I'm doing well. So our producer, TJ DeSantis, does not like when people call him Tej. I got to know. I didn't plan to call you Joseph off the top today. I mean, am I allowed to call you Joseph here and there, or is that not the way to go with you?
Well, you can if you want, but my birth name is actually Joel. So a little bit of a background on me there. My birth name's Joel. Kids started calling me Joey when I was a little kid, and that evolved to the more mature version of Joe. But I still get Joseph, so you can call me that, and I will respond to that if you would like.
All right. Well, Joe Osborne sounds pretty good. My dad's name is Joel, and I know people called him Joey for a while, but Joe Osborne's a power name. I don't know that you need to change that up. So our listeners, Joe, certainly know there's a heavy gambling slant on our show, and so we're obviously thrilled to have your insight now, hopefully a couple times a month. Before we get to the UFC stuff, you know, week two in the NFL is fresh. It's in the books for the most part. We got the Monday night or tonight. Your big play, or so it seemed, was the Arizona Cardinals catching 13 at the Ravens. So congrats on to you for the cash. How has your season gone, and how is week two for you thus far?
My season's going pretty good, man. Off to a winning start through 2 weeks so far. I'm trying to take a bit of a different mindset with these games, though, and maybe going with a contrarian pick like the Arizona Cardinals, who were plus 13 in Baltimore yesterday. So we're off to a pretty good start so far, but as we know, it's a week-to-week league, and that can turn pretty quickly.
So this Monday night football game tonight, for our listeners who are going to ingest this episode fresh, as many of them do, sort of a weird situation, right, with the Jets quarterback no longer ago. We've seen the line go from 2.5 to 6.5, the Jets catching 6.5. I'd imagine the sharp side is going to now be the Jets getting 6.5 at home. Seems like the world is on Cleveland tonight to at least win in some way.
Yeah, it is looking like that, and I kind of want to hop on the Jets too, but they have too many injuries, not just at quarterback, but their best defensive linemen's out and their best linebackers out too. So I'm going with a totals pick for this one, and I'm going to go under 45 points. Reason being, you talked about that line movement. It went from plus 3 to plus 6.5 or plus 7 at some books. To me, that kind of indicates that odds makers think there's going to be a significant offensive downgrade for the Jets. But the total's barely budged. It was at 45.5, now down to 45. So I just don't know how the Jets are going to score. You know, they were pretty healthy in week one. They only managed 16 points off 223 yards in that home loss to the Bills. Meanwhile, the Browns, you know, we saw how they looked in week one, man. It was not good. They scored just 13 points. I think they will be able to bounce back a little bit, but I don't think they'll absolutely go off. So I think under 45 is the best bet for this game.
The Cleveland Browns tonight are trying to avoid an 0-2 start. And I know you're already looking ahead to week three. You've got some numbers that are pretty telling on teams against the spread that start a season 0-2. Are you much of a trends guy? And what are those numbers telling us going into week three?
I am a trends guy, but you always have to have stats to back up the trends. You never just bet a trend blindly, and you have to figure out if there's logic to them. So you have teams like the Patriots, who have that longstanding quarterback and coach with Brady and Belichick. So I think some trends there kind of make sense. But if you're looking at a team like the Browns, who have a brand-new head coach, Baker Mayfield in his second year, when you're going back for trends 3, 4, 5 years ago, maybe not a whole lot of logic. But back to the other part of your question about teams that start 0-2 against the spread in the first 2 weeks of the season. In week three, over the last three seasons, they are 16-5 against the spread, John. 76% cover rate, a bit of a bigger sample size. Over the last five seasons, they're hitting at 65.7. Now, teams that start 0-2 straight up. So a few standout ones there, the Steelers, Jags, Panthers, teams that maybe people expected to be in the mix down the stretch run. maybe get into the playoffs. Since 2007, 98 teams have started 0-2. Only 12 of them turned it around to make the playoffs. So not good news for those teams, especially Steelers now with Ben Roethlisberger out for the season. So it looks like they're toast.
Wow.
Joe, I want to talk some UFC. We have the UFC Mexico City card coming up. Main event, Yair Rodriguez taking on Jeremy Stephens. What are the odds for that fight? And how does something like high altitude affect the odds for something like this? Yair Rodriguez obviously training in Mexico. How do you guys throw that into the equation?
Well, odds for this one, very close to a pick'em with Rodriguez. He's a very slight favorite at some books as of this afternoon. And odds makers, they factor everything into these lines. So if Rodriguez, he's the guy who's training at altitude, I'm sure they've done some research on Jeremy Stephens to see what his training camp is like. But that's always factored into the odds. And if you are a sharp bettor, that's something you should be paying attention to as well. Example of that, we're just talking about the NFL. People kind of talked about that narrative a little bit with the Chicago Bears yesterday playing in Denver. They slowed down significantly in the second half, specifically the fourth quarter. The announcers pointed it out several times. They went on to win the game, but they didn't cover the spread. So that is a big deal.
Joe Osborne, oddshark.com, with us here on the Anakin Florian podcast. Final thing from me before I get you out of here. Just in terms of college football versus the NFL, the college football betting volume is insane. So if I'm getting free picks from handicappers or picks I pay from handicappers, it's like, what am I going to have, like 17, 18 straight wagers potentially on a Saturday? How do you navigate the volume of college football relative to sort of the NFL, which seems just more ingestible and therefore bettable for somebody like me?
Well, if you have an edge, guys, go all in for college football. And that's the thing with college compared to the NFL. Like, you have these schools that not a whole lot of people have heard of, and there's information out there that not a whole lot of people know about. So you're going to get edges when you're betting on the spread and total, whereas in the NFL, everyone knows every single thing. Everyone knows everyone's business that's on the field and off, if the coach is fighting with the player. So if you have an edge, play it. I don't think you should necessarily cap yourself at a certain amount of games.
Yeah.
That's the way I would play that one.
No, that's a good response. So do you find that you have more volume on a Saturday than a Sunday?
I don't. My main focus is NFL, so I don't. But I bet a lot of baseball, guys. There's some days I have 8 different baseball bets in. There's some days I have one. There's some day I have none. So it all depends on, if I like the lines and if I think I have an edge.
Just a far more disciplined sports wager than I am. All right, before we let you go, for our listeners who want to maybe access some of the content you guys have going on, I know there's a lot of daily stuff at oddshark.com. Where can people find your stuff who are listening today?
Oddshark.com, guys, we are all over everything, every sport. It is our goal to be the odds leader. Big focus, obviously, on college football and NFL. We're covering all the big games. For MMA fans, we're covering all the big fights. We're doing picks for all the pay-per-views. We have lines right up until when the guys fight, for big fights and small, for a number of different organizations, including the card this weekend for the UFC. Find that at oddshark.com. Find me at JTFOZ. Covering NFL, I'll be all over the Major League Baseball playoffs. I'll be all over the NBA once that gets going. A little bit of college basketball. So we are your number one source for betting odds.
Joe Osborne. Don't call him Joseph. Don't call him Joel. I'm a Boston guy, so I might have to start calling you fucking Joey, kid, if you get on a tear. Joe Osborne, sports analyst, oddshark.com. Appreciate the time, my man. And we will talk to you in 2 weeks right before the big one, UFC 243, first weekend in October, buddy. Thanks for the time. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, guys. Good luck.
All right, there he is, Joe Osborne. Ken Flo, a couple things on the Vancouver show before we spin this thing forward to Mexico City. What am I watching with Todd Duffy and Jeff Hughes, Kenny? Can you tell me what's going on? I mean, I'm picturing these gamblers sitting home if you had, like, Todd Duffy by knockout on a prop bet or something. You know, it feels like you're walking to the fucking window to cash the ticket. Next thing you know, the guy's out of the fight. I'm not a fighter, right? And DC on the broadcast was like, hey, man, I'm not going to judge how much pain a guy is in or what Todd Duffy was dealing with. But if you want to get out of the fight, right, that's the way you do it, right, is you tell the referee and the doctor that you can't see and that you have double vision and you move on. I feel bad for Todd and Jeff, of course, Jeff Hughes on the other side. Talk to me, Ken Flo. Talk to me, buddy.
This was tough to watch, man. First of all, I was excited for Todd Duffy, who was away from the octagon for a little while. He really has kind of had a roller coaster ride in his UFC career with injuries and all the things that he's had to deal with. And seeing him back, it was just good to see him in there. He's a good guy. And then just seemed to kind of dead set on basically approaching this fight in the most difficult manner possible, just throwing down, just throwing wide, loopy punches, and he's standing right in front of his opponent. Why not stand back a little bit, gauge the distance? It seemed like he was way too emotional, way too excited out there, and that's kind of the problem when you are away from the octagon for that long. You're not used to competing, and it's not like he has 30 fights under his belt either, right? But at the same time, I felt like it should have been a smarter approach during the fight. Okay, let's talk about the actual eye poke. Now, the eye poke didn't look like it was that bad, and it's hard to tell. I can't feel that kind of pressure. Right. It seemed like it was a thumb, and it's a big thumb. These are heavyweights going at it, of course, but it didn't seem like it was a punch with the thumb that went into the eye. Then kind of we could say, hey, listen, he probably was seeing double out there. That kind of makes sense. It looked like it kind of just slowly rubbed against the eye. He was up against the cage. He was breathing very heavy. And he said the one thing you never say to a doctor if you want to continue fighting. And he said it right to the referee. And I turned to the guys that I was watching it with, and I said, that's not a good sign. This is going to be stopped. If he tells this to the doctor, this fight's going to be over. And sure enough, first thing, the doctor was actually giving him an out. He didn't. He actually asked the right question where he wouldn't almost get that question.
Right.
He was setting him up for success, and Duffy just said, I'm seeing double, I can't see, or I'm seeing two people or three people out there, whatever it was. Doctor immediately said, fight's over. So just tough to watch, man. Tough to watch and for a few different reasons.
So Todd Duffy kept saying, I just need some time. And who's to say if more time would have helped the situation? But as they properly corrected on the broadcast, you don't get 5 minutes, Ken Flo, right, for an eye poke. This isn't a groin strike, right? So there's some referee discretion and other things that come into this. So, disappointing nonetheless for Todd Duffy and Jeff Hughes. And I know crowd doesn't like it if they got issues with the doctor, the referee. It really had nothing to do with them. You know, Todd couldn't see and therefore couldn't fight. And we'll see if they run that one back. Anything else for you on the main card? Glover Teixeira, you know, the body of work just continues to be strong for this guy. He emerges by split decision over Nikita Krylov. Uriah Hall by split decision over Antonio Carlos Jr. Big win for Uriah Hall over Shoeface there. Misha Serkunov with the Peruvian necktie on Jimmy Crute. I mean, these Serkunov fights don't last very long, Kenny. Anything to wet your beak on there on the main card, kid?
dude, predicting a Serkunov fight is probably one of the more difficult things to do out there. It was good to see him get a submission win there over a very tough Jimmy Crute. For me, I think Glover Teixeira, the fact that this guy is late in his career, getting a win over a tough and young Russian fighter, I thought was good to see. I don't know how much longer he should be fighting, though. I feel like if this was 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Glover Teixeira would have had him out of there in the first round. He was making some decisions, and I couldn't tell if it was maybe his body not moving the way he wanted or lack of technical knowledge, but I don't know. Making some poor decisions and some poor positional moves there on the ground where I thought he would have a huge advantage over Krylov. But either way, he gets the win. Glover Teixeira, one of the nicest guys out there. He's been fighting forever. Just good to see him get a win over a young fighter, man. It's impressive.
So what can you tell us about the Peruvian necktie?
You know, it's a really devastating technique. You don't see it too often. I believe CB Dolloway was the last guy to hit it inside the octagon. It's a rare choke. You throw the leg over the head, and it's almost like you're pulling upwards across the trachea, and the leg, your top leg, is pressing down on the back of the head. So if there's one thing that actually feels like a guillotine, an actual guillotine that will chop your head off, it's the Peruvian necktie. If it's hit properly, it's a devastating choke, and it can be quite painful as well.
You want some trivia on the Peruvian necktie real quick?
Yeah, what do you got?
What do you got?
Do you know who it's named after or who coined the name?
No.
It's a Peruvian.
Well, Ken Flo's got a fucking, like, citizenship in Peru.
I know. I didn't know that. Who coined this?
Tony D'Souza.
Ah, there you go. It makes sense. I knew that. I just forgot. That's right. Tony D'Souza used to train with BJ Penn. He's a Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt. He has a jiu-jitsu academy in Peru, in Cusco, I believe, where Machu Picchu is, or close by. And one of the true OGs in the sport, man. And he had a nasty guillotine. And that's right. He was known for the Peruvian necktie, dude. Well done, TJ DeSantis.
That's what I'm here for.
That's good stuff. Hey, TJ, do you have 15 seconds for me on Duffy Hughes? I was really sort of dumbfounded watching that back. Maybe it's just because it's so fresh in my head and I watched it back this morning, but what were your thoughts on the end of that fight?
I mean, super disappointing. I think there were positives there for both guys. It's hard to sit back and try to, like, forecast and see really what is happening with that eye and be like, okay, that was bad, that wasn't bad. I don't know. Rub me in my eye and it's open. I'm not leaving the house for the rest of the day. It's gonna ruin my day, so I don't know. But I'm not a fighter, so.
Right. I just think there was so much work that Todd put in to get back to that point. But hey, I didn't, obviously he didn't want to risk anything further with the eye. And hey, you know, I shouldn't have gone too far down this rabbit hole, but you know, we've had a lot of serious eye injuries. So, you know, maybe it's better that Todd did not take any more damage on that eye. All right. Last thing on Tristan Connolly, right? So there have been a lot of guys who've tried to sort of take this torch from George St. Pierre in Canada. And I do think there are some up-and-coming fighters. I think Hakeem Dawodu is a guy, Ken Flo, that maybe can represent Canada in a positive UFC light. And I'm not saying Tristan Connolly.
Are you saying that Tristan Connolly is going to be the new George St. Pierre? Come on!
I promise you I'm not. Okay. I promise you I'm not. Okay. Especially because he competes at 155 pounds and, you know, the clock's already working against you if you're in that division. But I liked a lot of what I saw just in terms of the MMA intangibles and the heart and the ability to go out, you know, buoyed by his home crowd or otherwise. I like the fact that he won $100,000 in bonus money because that's only going to improve his training moving forward. But the point is we don't need a champion in Canada necessarily, right? But we need people and fighters that Canadian fans are going to gravitate to, you know, and I'm not casting judgment on the Elias Theodoros of the world or Chad Laprise or Olivier Aubin-Mercier, but there have been a lot of guys who we thought maybe could be that guy. And certainly if I'm buying stock in Hakeem Dawodu versus Tristan Connolly, you know, I'm probably sitting here buying the Dawodu stock, right? But I don't know, man. I liked what I saw, and, you know, Canadian fans and MMA fans, you know, had a lot of reasons to get behind the guy, and they certainly did.
Well, I will say this. First of all, I mean, that's a pretty good Rocky story, right? And getting the call on, what, 5 days notice and going in there, maybe not being the most athletic or most technical fighter, going against this guy who physically looks far superior to him, and going in there and getting it done against a guy who even didn't even make weight. So I love that story. It's a true underdog story. How can you not support a guy like Connolly, you know, putting it all on the line there in his hometown, getting it done, was pretty freaking awesome, man.
All right, great show in Vancouver. It's always fun being there. I was glad to not be there, though, when that Peruvian necktie situation played out. I was like, what the fuck is going on down here? You know, just lay out, look to my right, and pray there's a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu black belt sitting there. All right. So this UFC rip is crazy. I mean, it's not as crazy a rip as we had this summer, but it feels like there's a live event every single week, and I can't think the next week off, maybe late in October. To that end, UFC Fight Night, Rodriguez versus Stevens. Let us get to the pronunciation of the week. TJ DeSantis. What are we, 8-9 on the year? We chasing 500 today, TJ? Is that right, or 7-9? He doesn't care.
I think we're 8-9. Hey, 8 is the most dangerous number in the world. No, wait. Never mind. It's 7. It's 7 because 7, 8, 9. Damn it.
Okay.
Hey, at least I got Tony D'Souza. I can fall back on that.
You did.
Yes.
You got that right. But TJ couldn't give a rip what his pronunciation of the week record is. You know, we're just one of myriad podcasts under this TJ DeSantis conglomerate. We're a flagship show, by the way. You should want to know your record and pronunciation.
I'm just saying, where's my incentive? Where's my $100 a week like Longo gets on picks, you know?
All right, well, Kenny and I'll talk about that offline, and we'll try to incentivize this thing. If you go back to 500 today, we wipe the slate clean, and that would certainly make a lot of sense. All right, so this fighter will be competing in the featured prelim this weekend on ESPN Plus Mexico City. His 7th UFC appearance, he faces fellow bantamweight Carlos Joaquin TJ DeSantis. Of whom am I speaking?
Jose Quinones.
Give it to me one more time, TJ. That one was that pronunciation certainly not going to win the point. We'll give you a second chance.
Jose. Damn it. Hang on. See, now I'm feeling pressure. Jose Quinones.
All right, let's hear Jose.
Jose Alberto Quinones Navarro.
That's a win.
Nah.
That's a win.
Nah, dog. You said Quinones. It's Quinones. Nez. The Ñ is only on the first N.
I'm not giving it to him, John.
No, definitely not.
If you're thinking about giving it to this guy, I'm out of here.
Oh, yeah, definitely not. I know. Okay. All right. You got it. You got a budding jiu-jitsu school, may RockyBJJ.com. Like, Kempo's out of here. No, that is definitely not a point. You want me to pick that one apart?
We are professionals.
Jose Quinones. Yeah, TJ, that is not a hit, but we'll still incentivize you for next week. But that is 8-10. I will make a note. 8-10 on the year for TJ DeSantis.
At least I got Tony D'Souza. I'm falling back on that for the rest of my life.
As should you. All right. Today's main event challenge brought to you by mybookie.ag. If you found $100 on the street, would you pick it up or do you keep walking? Might look around, but you'd probably take the money. So to that end, why do you keep picking winners and not betting on them? I go to mybookie. It's fast. It is easy. And they pay when you win. Let's face it, where you're betting just as important as who you are betting on, and I would not be endorsing MyBookie if I didn't believe they were the best. Now is the time to make your first deposit with the football season underway. A lot of big UFC shows on tap over the next few months. You can also bet on games live, by the way. I know a lot of you are getting into the live betting now after kickoff, after the opening tip. If by the second half, maybe it looks like your bet is going to lose, you can hedge. Maybe take the other side, soften the blow a little bit. Now, if you don't have the bankroll like Ken Flo and you're the kind of guy who likes to bet a little and win a lot, maybe try a parlay. I'm a straight wager guy. I've said that before. But if you like the parlay, all your picks come through. You multiply your winnings. No matter how you choose to bet and attack the board, though, there's no better time than the start of the football season to get in the game. And we've got a special offer for Anakin Florian podcast listeners. Join now and MyBookie will double your first deposit. Use promo code Anik Florian to activate the offer. That's promo code Anik Florian. One word, Anik Florian. Visit mybookie.ag today. You play, you win, you get paid. All right. Take a sip of my green tea. I'm told that green tea will make me lose weight, Kenny. Is that what's going to happen? We're back on video.
That's what I hear. It's good for weight loss. Gives you some good energy without being too much. Yeah.
You know. All right. A little green tea today. So you're going to like the updated standings here, Ken Flo. So Team Anik led Team Florian, as we have done all year. It was 111-109 going into UFC Vancouver. You and Ian Parker both went 500 on your picks, but you correctly had Glover Teixeira by decision, 3 points. You also had Justin Gaethje by first round knockout, 3 points. Team Florian wins the week 6-3, and that means for the first time in 2019 – Team Florian is in control of the main event challenge, 115-114.
He back, son.
Oh, my God.
I mean, I'm going to do it again. Is that what's going to happen right now?
Dude, so I'm going to go back to the April broadcast and see just how big this deficit was. The fact that you wipe it out mid-September with 3 months to go, I mean, it's absolutely incredible. So Ken
Flo has the
comeback kid Ian Parker's got some work to do. First up for us, three picks today, by the way, for this UFC offering in Mexico City in the flyweight division. The undefeated Askar Askarov making his UFC debut. He will do so as a minus 147 favorite against the returning Brandon Moreno, who comes back at plus 127. Ian Parker, good afternoon, sir.
First off, I just want to throw something out there. Kenny, well done this past weekend. For those of you don't pay attention to the picks, Kenny beat me based on the method of victories on both the co-main and main event. Am I correct, John?
So you're going to question the main event challenge format? You already asked to back up your time slot today, and the answer to that
was no. I'm not questioning. I just want to make sure that I was correct. Because I think we picked everything the same for the most part, minus the methods of victory, correct?
Yes, that is accurate. I believe there might have been one pick, one fight that he had. But no, for the most part, that's all it was. He got an extra 2 points in both of those situations. But you got a point. You know, it is what it is. I mean, hey, I'm on I'm the captain of your team.
You know, if it comes down to the method of victories, Kenny just, he got me on that Glover one and got me by one round on the Gaethje fight. But it doesn't matter. Kenny's going down this week. I'm bouncing back. Fuck it.
And I'm on your team, buddy. I'm on your team. Let's just make it clear.
Feels like it.
Team,
let's do it.
Team South Florida, Team Boca Raton, Team Parkland. All right. So what do you make of Askar Askarov here making the UFC debut, getting the love from Las Vegas here against the old friend Brandon Moreno, Ian? Which way are you going?
You know what? I find this matchup, I always find it very interesting when you get these guys to make their debut that have the undefeated records, and they come in against guys like Brandon Moreno. And I don't know if Moreno is getting the respect he should deserve. And if they're basing this off of records in a very unpopular flyweight division, then that's the only reason why I see it. You know, I don't think there's any shame in Moreno losing to guys like Sergio Pettis. You know, losing to guys who were at once at the top of the division when Moreno was not even expected to have the success he did. Everyone seems to forget Moreno was a huge underdog against Luis Smolka, and he won that fight and finished it. And I think this fight actually kind of plays into his favor a little bit. You know, his opponent here, who's, what is he, a favorite at minus 147, I checked this morning, 10-0. Every fight hasn't gone past the second round minus one fight, and he's won by submission. But Moreno's really fast. He's got good hands, and he's a good submission guy himself. You know, I don't love this, you know, this division in general. Sometimes it's really hard to pick, but if, you know, Moreno's going to kind of have a home field advantage situation here, I'm going to go with the underdog to lead off these picks, and I'm going Brandon Moreno.
All right, Brandon Moreno, the pick to click for Ian Parker. Ken Flo Askarov, 10-0, all finishes. Moreno on the other side, 15-5 overall. He was part of that flyweight purge in 2018. He had lost two fights in a row. Got a main event, if you recall, against Sergio Pettis in the UFC. Goes back to LFA, wins a belt June 7th. Now he will try to hand Askarov his first pro loss. What do you think about this one at flyweight, kid?
I think Ian is pretty accurate here. Listen, Brandon Moreno is one of those guys who, if you meet, you're going to love the kid. Just very genuine, hard worker, tough as nails. Wouldn't expect it because the guy is so nice. He looks like he's 13 years old. And I tell you what, you know, this guy Askarov, he's got a lot of wins on the ground. I think Reynolds pretty sharp on the ground as well. And it's always hard to tell how good a guy is unless he's fought in the UFC a couple times, right? So for Askarov, yes, he's undefeated. Yes, he's from Russia and he's probably tough and no doubt about that. But I think he's going to have his hands full against Moreno. I think Ian's on here, and it's just tough. We know what Moreno's about. Yes, he's had some losses in the UFC. It's all been against high-level guys. Askarov, I think the UFC is going to be the true proven ground here. I'm going to go with Moreno for the win as well.
All right, couple picks there on the underdog, about plus 130, Brandon Moreno. Co-main event, women's strawweight division. Alexa Grasso, minus 125, the favorite against the former champ, Carla Esparza, who is plus 105. Grasso, I checked today, still just 26 years old. Thought she looked great, by the way, against Karolina Kowalkiewicz. That was in June. Esparza also comes off a win here over Vina Janjidova. That was back in April. We will also need the round and the method of victory here, Ian Parker, your favorite part of the main event challenge. Who do you like in the co-main?
We should call it the Kenny Florian Decision Challenge.
yeah.
I like, you know, you gave it to me. I had a dunk it right there.
I know.
Talking the most shit I've ever talked, and I blew the fucking lead. Listen to me over here. All right, so this is an interesting fight. I think this is kind of the perfect test for where Alexa Grasso is in her career. Only reason why I say that is because when you get to this part of the division, you got to be prepared for everything. And outside of Tatiana Suarez, Carla Esparza might be the next, well, kind of hard to say, but true wrestler in the division who's fought everyone there is to fight. You know, and like you said, against Carolina Kovalchevich, Alexa Grasso looked at her absolute best. I think if she keeps this fight standing, which I think her takedown defense has definitely improved, her cardio is leaps and bounds improved, and her striking, she might be one of the better actual technical strikers in the division. You know, I just think that Carla, at this point, she's shown better hands, but I don't think it's to the point where she's getting to the top five ever again. I think her wrestling's still too predictable. I think at this point in the division, unless she's able to use her combinations to get the fight to the ground, you know, mix it up to shoot in, I think Alexa Grasso, you know, as young as she is, she's still pretty seasoned. I'm going Alexa Grasso by Kenny Florian decision.
Grasso by decision. And we do have to tweak the way we score decisions, but not in 2019. We don't. In 2020, we'll do just that. All right, Alexa Grasso by decision for Ian Parker.
Wait, John, Kenny, let me ask you a question. If Todd Duffy quits due to a not real eye poke and Kenny chooses Todd Duffy, should I get the win for Jeff Hughes?
You know, I'm so glad that you brought that up because I feel like people are going to be banging on me for being too harsh on Todd Duffy, right, as a non-fighter. At least Ian Parker's 1-0.
That's the one fight that we picked different, and his guy quit.
Right.
But it was a draw. I mean, it's a no contest.
Of course it is. Yeah. And Ken Flo's guy was trending towards the knockout. Anyway, all right. Yeah. So Alexa Grasso by decision. Kenny, I like this fight. I think you're going to get the very best versions of both of these fighters. Grasso is obviously much improved. Esparza has learned a lot over her UFC career. I think she'll present her best version to date. I like that they're being given the showcase in Mexico City. It's all in front of Alexa Grasso. What do you think? Does she take care of business here against the former champ?
And I tell you what, I do like this fight. I also think it's an extremely difficult one to pick. I think Esparza, the way that she matches up against Grasso, she can pose a lot of problems against Alexa Grasso. And I think Grasso has struggled a little bit with her takedown defense. I do think she's way more confident this time around. I think she's a much sharper striker than Carla Esparza. She's going to have to be sharp with her takedown, especially up against the cage where she kind of struggled before. I think Suarez is a much better wrestler, I think, than Esparza. Esparza tends to get off to a slow start as well. Now, that's something you can't do, especially in Mexico City, where I think she's going to slow down. I think Grasso will get stronger as the fight goes on. Carla Esparza, I think, will slow down. So Esparza needs to get off to a strong start. I haven't really seen that from her. I like Alexa Grasso by decision as well. I know Ian Parker. But I just don't think she has the knockout capability of really finishing the fight. I don't know if she has enough power. I think she has the speed for sure, but I don't know if she has the power. Esparza's pretty dang tough, but I'll go with Grasso by decision.
All right, a lot of agreement thus far. Doesn't always make for great radio, but I like that you guys are being honest. Main event, we will have Ken Flo lead the main event today. High stakes in the UFC featherweight division. Yair Rodriguez holding as the ever so slight -115 favorite. Jeremy Stephens, about -105. For our purposes, though, that's big, right? Because you're getting an extra point for Jeremy Stephens if you like him. On the other side, Rodriguez, Kenny, one appearance since May of 2017. Certainly made it count, won $100,000 in bonus money, the last second knockout of the Korean Zombie, Chan Sung Jung. Stevens, on the other side, has fought 5 times in that window, but back-to-back losses for him against Jose Aldo and most recently Zabit Magomedsharipov. Stevens, Rodriguez, who wins, Ken Flo, and how do they get it done?
Man, this is such an interesting fight. I think Jeremy Stevens has insane power. I think he's a guy that the Mexican fans are going to absolutely love out there, but he is definitely in enemy territory here with Yair Rodriguez, yes. A guy who, again, has been training in Mexico City. That stadium is just going to erupt when he gets out there. He's extremely exciting, hit probably the craziest knockout I have ever seen up elbow against the Korean Zombie. The fight will go down as one of the greatest ever as well. He has a fearlessness and a confidence about him when he goes out to compete that is hard to match. His speed is very impressive. He's going to have to use his reach out there. My concern for Yair Rodriguez is the fact that he does get hit, and because he does have a tendency of getting wild and being fearless, he can get hit with shots, obviously. You know, for Jeremy Stephens, though, he's going to have to take a gamble. Jeremy Stephens has to go for it straight away and try to knock him out in the first 12 minutes. The problem is, if he doesn't knock him out in those first 12 minutes, Yair, again, because he's been training at high altitude, I think is going to come a little bit stronger and finish the fight a little bit stronger. This is a tough one for me. I can definitely see this one going either way, but I'm going to go with the slight underdog, Jeremy Stephens, here to get it done by knockout or TKO in round two.
Wow. Ken Flo goes Jeremy Stephens, knockout, round two. And these are tough, right? And I always qualify this during the main event challenge, but you guys are picking these pick'em fights, right? Before fight week transpires, right? So very close fight on paper, couldn't be any closer, and you're having to pick on Monday morning at 11 o'clock a.m. Pacific. Not ideal, but of course you always reserve the right to change your pick. Ian Parker on the other side, 31st UFC appearance for Jeremy Stephens. He is 15-15 in the UFC, but there's certainly been more good than bad. Was making a featherweight run there for a time, Ian. Now his back's up against the wall. Your thoughts on Stephens as a slight dog here against Yair Rodriguez?
I'm actually extremely surprised, Kenny, that you went with Stephens based on the breakdown, which your breakdown was pretty spot on as usual. Here's what I find with Jeremy Stephens right now. He's been fighting a certain way for a long time, and he's been taking a lot of shots too. His knockout against Josh Emmett was super impressive back in February of 18. But then he loses to Aldo via TKO. And then he loses to Zabit in a very one-sided unanimous decision. And, you know, a lot of people compare the striking, the flashiness of Zabit and Yair Rodriguez. And based on, you know, Jeremy Stephens' cardio also, we haven't really seen that test the third round in, I don't know, a very long time. But there are times where you've seen him in that third round. If he doesn't land a crazy shot, he's usually not winning that third round. You know, in the but, you know, Yair is not really going to provide a threat with the takedowns. I just don't know if Jeremy Stephens is going to be able to really handle the speed, the distance, you know, the reach that Yair Rodriguez is going to have in this fight. I think it's going to be a good amount. You know, he's a tall, lean fighter. He throws a lot of things. I'm glad you didn't pick decision. At least that's good. That would have been wild. Because if you would have won that one by decision, I would have been floored by that. I was going to go opposite of whatever you picked anyway, just to try to get back in since we both picked the same. But I really thought you were going to go Yair Rodriguez. I'm going to go home field advantage. I know Stephens has the experience. He's fought very high level of competition. I just think the speed factor, I think training in, you know, New Mexico City with that, you know, with that elevation is going to be really challenging for Stephens. I know he's been there for a little bit, but that doesn't compare to being there full time. And I think Rodriguez, you know, in this location has to shine. This is his moment. This is his breakout moment. And I'm going to say that he finishes Jeremy Stephens in round two.
Round two, you going TKO or sub?
TKO. There will be no submissions from Yair Rodriguez in this fight.
All right, Yair Rodriguez, round two, TKO. Sounds to me, Ian, though, like a fight you won't necessarily be betting. Is that fair? I mean, I know you're going to bet it to have some action, but it doesn't sound like you have this huge appetite to go bet Yair Rodriguez.
It's really hard right now. It's not that I wouldn't lean that way. I gotta, for this type of fight, I gotta see how Jeremy did with the weight cut. I gotta see what these guys look like on the scales. You know, it really does matter because this is, you know, Kenny really said this, and again, I'm not just blowing smoke because it's Ken Flo and everyone loves Kenny, and I get it. It's the eyebrows and the hair. It's beautiful. But, you know, it's the fact that, you know, it's the fact that Jeremy Stephens just brings a certain level of power in this division. But I think maybe outside of like him and Josh Emmett, it doesn't really exist consistently. You know, you don't hear too many one-hitter quitters in the lower weight classes. And Stephens really brings that. And he doesn't just throw it haphazard. He's calculated with it. He's been around long enough. And that's really his method, you know, his path to victory. Unless he surprises everyone, he puts Yair on his back for a couple of rounds to try and steal some rounds. That could happen too. But that's just not the way Stephens rolls. So you know, to your point, I can't bet that fight confidently one way or the other yet. You'll have to get back to me later in the week for that one.
All right. And you can catch Ian Parker live at Anik Florian Pod on Instagram, doing those live hits with Ken Flo and with me every now and again. So maybe we'll get to you on Saturday in Mexico City.
Yeah, let's do one this week.
Look at Kenny being proactive with it.
All right, Ian. Good stuff, buddy. Anything else before we let you fly, kid?
Yeah, I actually was going to want to get from you and Kenny your guys' thoughts on the whole Justin Gaethje situation. I don't know if you guys covered that. If you did, I don't want anything to be redundant. And I apologize.
Oh, yeah, we talked about it. I mean, were you did you have something that you wanted to add or piggyback on?
I really hope that if the UFC wants to build this guy into the megastar he really can be, that they do actually give him Conor McGregor, because I think the Tony fight really has to happen. I think if Tony Ferguson somehow does not get a title fight, that's just criminal at this point. I've been very heavy on that situation. And I think that Gaethje versus Conor, listen, we're at a point right now that who are you going to fight? Who's going to fight Conor that there's any value in bumping Conor up into a title spot? You know, for example, if Conor beats Gaethje, then the story could be told whoever Conor could fight the winner of Habib and Tony. Then it matters.
Yeah.
The lack of activity is poison.
Ian, I said the exact same thing. We're on the same frequency today, I think, and besides the main event in Mexico. But, no, I agree. Listen, when you're trying to sell a fight, you want to make sure that the fans are going to get their money's worth. I mean, what's better than Gaethje and Conor McGregor?
Oh.
No, and you know what? And I don't think that – I think if Conor loses, what does that really change for his legacy at this point? He's coming off a loss anyway. I think Conor – has done everything he possibly could do for the sport. And if he gets knocked out by Gaethje, so is almost everyone else, right?
Yep.
If you handle it with class and respect like Cowboy, you could still fight big money fights because of who you are. And what you did was, this is like a WWE move, you're putting a guy over. You're kind of throwing Gaethje into stardom now, into mainstream. You know, a lot of casual MMA fans may not know who he is, which is a crime. You know, this is a guy that goes in there in a division, probably the hardest division in the history of the sport, and he's knocking guys out like it's no problem. And this Kenny, I want to hear your opinion on this, but Kenny, was this not his most impressive win just based on how patient he was, how technical his striking was? I mean, he didn't do his usual brawl. He looked really solid in there.
Yes. First of all, he didn't take a lot of damage, which is unusual for a Gaethje fight, right? This has been a trend now where he's winning these fights by brutal knockouts and not taking a lot of damage. And number two, either way, you set up an amazing fight against Khabib Nurmagomedov, should he win the belt, or with Tony Ferguson, right, for the championship at 155 pounds between the winner of Gaethje and Conor. So, I mean, I think it's a win-win. I think that's the direction the UFC should go to. I don't know. We'll see what happens, man.
The question is, will Conor take that fight? Will Conor man
well,
up
exactly.
And do it?
Therein lies the rub.
You know.
That's it. It's all right there. It's promotionally, you can be sure they will try to make that fight. I mean, it aligns perfectly, you know?
Yeah, well, sometimes it just feels like, and coming from a managing background, sometimes they try to protect certain guys with certain things. If you look at career paths, I mean, you go back and look at Conor's career path. I don't think until he fought Chad Mendes, he fought a really strong wrestler. And Chad Mendes took that fight on short notice. If you go back and watch that fight, Mendes was dominating him until he gassed out. You know, this is a guy in Gaethje who we haven't even seen wrestle, and he can absolutely wrestle. It's just we know that he's going to go in there. He's going to try and take Conor's head off. I get chills even thinking about it. I really hope they do it. I hope it's the co-main event, the Khabib versus Tony, and blow the roof off the place.
Oh, I mean, we can only pray. All right, buddy, that'll be it from you for today. Just kidding, buddy. Great stuff,
yes,
as always.
No,
did you have
good.
A kid in the car? Do you have a kid in the car doing those picks today?
I do. My son's handing me notes because cool. he was very upset that Todd Duffy quit when he was getting tired.
Yeah.
Getting back in the win column.
That's good. Oh, way to punch it on the way out, buddy. We'll talk to you next week.
Have a good one, guys.
All right, we got to get on out of here. May Rocky BJJ must be beckoning at some point today. I mean, how do you not hit those gray mats like 6 out of 7 days a week?
I'm on my way there right now. I left there about midnight with Ryan Hall, been training like an animal.
I can tell, dude, lean and mean. All right, we will talk to you all in a week's time. We'll see who emerges in that killer main event Yaya Rodriguez, Jeremy Stevens. Also get you some picks for the Copenhagen show, or is it Copenhagen? I don't know. We'll have to get that for you by next week. Jack Hermanson, Jared Cannonier, the main event there. Thank you to our guests today, Ray Longo, Joe Osborne, Ian Parker. Our producer is TJ DeSantis. Thanks to every last one of you for listening, for subscribing, maybe now watching, and also for getting the message out there about the show. This thing would have been dead a long time ago without you all. So thank you for that. Have a great week and weekend. For Ken Flo, I'm John Anik. We'll talk to you next Monday. Until then, yo, fuck it.
The John Anik and Kenny Florian podcast is a TJ DeSantis production. Its content is intended for private use only.
Sports betting is sweeping across the country faster than the coronavirus, and Wagering Week is your antidote. I'm Tom Martin, and I'm a veteran sports analyst and respected sports handicapper who helped build ESPN's brand. I've been recognized and awarded by Pro Football Weekly and Gaming Today magazine as the honest handicapper. Let the other guys give you the same old boring sports talk with the same tired storylines. We'll give it to you straight here every Friday on Wagering Week. Don't gamble with other podcasts. Let Sports Garden Network's Wagering Week help your bottom line.